Ron and Anian.
It's me. You're buying me. I say it all the time. You come to the shop, this is what you get. It's no different. This is it exactly, except I'm standing there usually in a blue uniform and lately suspenders because my pants keep falling down.
The Car Doctor.
You don't want to know what goes bad on those engines. Usually it's head gaskets or the heads crack. That was the week. Yeah, that was. See, you shouldn't have asked.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I want to start off this hour talking a little bit about, well, the car warranty and how we all kind of lean on it heavy. We all sit there and say, hey, I've got a new car warranty or I've got a used car warranty. Nothing.
Excuse me, I'd like to talk to you about your car warranty.
Yes, sir. What's your problem, sir? How can I help you? How are you today, Tom? We have a lot to talk about today, don't we? are we going to talk about new yet? We'll wait till the end. Should we wait till the end? Okay, we'll wait till the end. We have a good news story to tell you guys if you stick around till the end of at least the end of this hour. All right, we'll do it by the end of this hour, but we have a good news story. I want to talk about car warranties because, you know, it's I don't really talk about them. I'll suggest that you get them sometimes, but I want to tell you a story about where a warranty just, I don't know, I don't think the warranty, you know, what good is it? Because it may not work, as demonstrated by this example. In 06, Mercury Montego rolled into the shop, and actually it was a couple of weeks ago. And an 06 Montego was one of those rare, weird cars produced. The equivalent was a Ford 500 back in the day, in the mid 2000s there, and it was only produced for a couple of 4 or 5 year model years. It wasn't a real long run. And this particular Montego, like a lot of them of that generation, of that body style, had a CVT transmission. And I don't know, CVTs were kind of becoming mainstream, but it was more experimental at the time. But whatever, this customer found this car out in Pennsylvania, no knock against Pennsylvania. It was at a used car lot. Clean little car, pretty little car, nice red, you know, well cared for, well maintained. And it only had 40-some-odd thousand miles on it. And when she purchased it, Maggie was also able to purchase a used car warranty with it for powertrain coverage. Well, it sure is a good thing she did, because about 3 months later, going back a couple of weeks, maybe mid-August, it puked the trans. It just, you know, couldn't get a trans for it. I think I talked about this up here on air, maybe in a positive light. I'd have to go back and listen to the audio, because here's the negative side of it. So she had the trans done, no secret. She had the trans done. She was able to take it back to the used car dealer. They dealt with the warranty company. The warranty company had to talk to Ford. Ford had no parts available, so Ford specifically built a transmission for this vehicle from scratch, I understand, and put a remanufactured transmission in it that took them a couple of weeks to get and get squared away, which I would have kind of been annoyed with. But, you know, maybe my thinking has to change. Maybe the world is changing. Maybe it's, you know, the warranty doesn't guarantee you instant access, which I've said for a long time, but boy, this sure was a long time. And trans went in the car, trans control module went in the car, and a couple of weeks went by and started doing the same thing again. Well, sort of the same thing. It actually has more codes in it than it originally had. It actually has more faults with the transmission this time, setting a multitude of things that led me to believe that perhaps there's something mechanically assembled wrong inside the transmission. I don't know yet. I know it's got to go back to Ford. She took it to the local Ford dealer, who is either afraid of it or just didn't want to be bothered with it, and towed it back to her house. She found it in her driveway with a note that said, "We'll call you," which I kind of took as a weird statement. Just maybe they were just not up to the task yet. They made some excuse about having to get to some of the other work that has to be done because of all the flood vehicles that are here in New Jersey as well as other parts of the country, and they're trying to deal with that. But I just thought that was a really weird, rude way to, you know, here's your car under warranty. We don't want to work on it right now. We're too busy. I'm not sure how that transposes into, you know, business etiquette, but whatever. But I thought about it from your perspective, you the consumer. Like Maggie, you went out and you bought a used car and you bought a used car warranty. And not only can you not get parts for it readily and easily, but you can't even find anybody to work on it. And the guy who's supposed to work on it can't work on it or doesn't want to work on it. And I guess a warranty, we really have to acknowledge that a warranty, it varies by the situation, how effective it's going to be. How mainstream is that car? How many of them did they produce? How common is that vehicle? And a warranty is a good thing to have in your back pocket because it can help defray the cost, but it doesn't guarantee instant success. I should know that. After a year and a half, I think it's safe to report now that I believe my Ford Explorer is fixed, finally. The final fix for the navigation radio system going out of control and locking up was a complete emptying of the software and a complete reflash for that portion of the vehicle's operating system. And it's been 3 weeks now, and I think it's fixed. It's been good. And, you know, there's a mainstream car. How many Ford Explorers did they build in 2018 and before and after, right? A gazillion? You know, how many Mercury Montegos with CVTs? Well, evidently not a lot because they had to scrounge up the parts. You know, I think Henry had to look for them under his bed at the mansion because they didn't seem to have a lot of CVT transmission parts laying around. It was difficult. So be aware, you know, when you're going out to buy that used car, how old is it? And how many, you know, how common is it and how popular was it and what are you paying for it? And you may find yourself in a spot where, yeah, I've got to buy this car. It's a good price. It's the right price. And I'm going to get a warranty on it. But that doesn't guarantee you instant success. That doesn't guarantee you, in the event something breaks, that you will get instant satisfaction within a reasonable time period. You know, I say instant. You know, a car that can be fixed in a week. I think that's a reasonable time frame now for something to have to take up to a week because of complexity of the industry and what the industry is going through and, you know, the world in general, right? The supply chain and the way the supply chain is broken in so many places for so many products and so many industries, and just something to be aware of. To complicate it, and I'll point this out, I'm not sure where it's going to go, but this little 06 Montego also has a lean fault code. It's starting to set a P0171 Bank 1 system lien, and it's just about to set a P0174 Bank 2 system lien. And I spent some time with it yesterday in the shop. It was my last car of the day, and it's top of my mind, really. I'm thinking about what could be wrong here because I haven't come up with an answer as to why it's running lean. And I don't see a connection to the transmission. And, you know, you try not to draw a conclusion. Gee, is it transmission related? Did they leave something disconnected? Changed? What did they alter? What did they modify? I don't have that answer yet. I know I'm sort of stuck in limbo because Monday it's got to go back to Ford until Ford gets around to fixing it, which they told her they would do by the end of October. So that's 6 weeks away. I don't think the car will last that long. I bet you Maggie trades it in for something because she's getting kind of frustrated, which I feel her pain and I feel your pain when you go through this. But just a word to the wise, you know, it's be careful of what you buy, how popular, how mainstream. A warranty policy doesn't always guarantee you instant access, instant success in that it's going to work. And make sure that wherever you're buying the warranty policy from, what's the reputation of that repair facility? Do they stand behind the product? Are they able to stand behind it? You know, what's their record show? You know, one of the good things about social media, and I question if they're all good, but one of the good things about social media is you can look up and get, well, some kind of frame of reference of what you're dealing with. And I'm not saying everything on a social media page is accurate and, you know, everything everybody is saying is 100%, but it does give you a point of reference. You know, someone once said to me, in auto repair, if more people swear by you than at you, you're ahead of the curve. And I really think that to be a true statement because there's always going to be somebody you can't make happy, regardless of how hard you try. And, you know, you've got to take that with a grain of salt too. So just be aware. Okay, it can happen to you. If you're out there this year and you're buying a used car, you're buying a new car and you're getting a warranty, new car is probably a little bit easier, right? The first couple of years, 5, 6, 7 years warranties, it's more popular. But you're buying an older used car, 15, 16 years old. And of course, I should mention too, you're buying a used car, no matter how old it is at this point, or any car for that matter. You know, look for the signs of flood. We've had an awful lot of crazy weather around the country the last couple of months. And, you know, don't be afraid to open the trunk, smell for water, smell for mildew, right? You know, if that car was in water, that car is likely a problem. I've seen very few flood cars ever survive to the point of reliability where they actually make it out and they run, unless they're strictly mechanical, something so old, well, you wouldn't be buying one of those anyway. So just something to think about. We got a lot going on this hour. We're going to talk a little bit about the Chevy Bolt, how GM is practicing social distancing. We're going to talk about the state of Maine. They've rolled out the first electric school bus, and we're going to talk about what they're doing up there. We've got some letters and comments from you, the listeners. We always love to talk to you guys. But we're here naturally, of course, at 855-560-9900 to talk to you about your car problem. That's what the Car Doctor likes to do best. Let's pull over and take a pause. When we return, we'll open the garage doors wide open. Don't go away.
It on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Mike in Maine. 13 F-150 and some blower motor and temperature control problems. Mike, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
I'm trying to figure it out.
Okay. What kind of problems are you having?
I have no controls.
So what exactly happens, Mike? Does it light up? Do you have nothing going on? Has it always been like this? Is it intermittent? Tell me the story.
It's always been like this. It came out of Texas. It was rust-free, so that's why we get it. But, as soon as you turn the key on, the fan blower comes on in the heater, but you don't have the control of the speed or the temperature.
Okay.
There's nothing there.
Right.
The lights come on, you know, on the control panel, but nothing works.
So it lights up. It's just inoperative.
Right.
All right. Has anybody done any kind of diagnosis to it?
Yeah, I had a friend kind of help out. We changed the resistor down by the glove box. And then the HVAC module behind the radio panel.
Okay. Well, changing parts isn't diagnosis, Mike. Anybody plug a scan tool into it?
Supposedly he did, but I wasn't there when he did it.
So. Okay. So what I want to know, all right, because a 13 F-150, like a lot of vehicles of that generation, run a controlled area network or CAN bus for most of the vehicle. And that one, that's the medium CAN network on that vehicle, the blower control and temp control. And I want to know specifically, does it have any communication faults? And I'll tell you what you're going to find if he goes in. And I'm not talking about using an OBD2 scanner. I'm talking about using a year, make, model specific. 13 Ford F-150, you know, year, make, model, engine, trans, etc. You're probably going to find a communication fault. A U is in Utah 0164. All right. And I say this because this is very different than anything you've ever fixed before, probably, in the sense that you're now into computers talking to computers. You're into, in simplest form, this is three telephones in the house and one of the telephones is bad and it's locking up the other two. In complicated form, this has a FICOM, front interface control module, that runs that dash display, that runs the blower and the temp control. And this can have communication faults. This can be something as simple as, and here's why I want to pull codes. All right, let me say it like this. The reason why I want to pull codes is if I've got no codes, no communication faults, no problems from the computer side, I know I'm dealing strictly with something component failure. I'm dealing with maybe a bad blower motor. I'm dealing with a failed resistor that the computer can't electrically see. But I want to know if that communication fault is there. If that 164 COM fault is there, this probably has a bad C248 connector down in the left lower kick panel, just to the left of the firewall. Or I'm sorry, just to the left of the A-pillar down by your foot on the left side. They're known for this. They corrode that connector in the worst possible way. But I don't want you to start taking all that apart until somebody goes in and this is where we talk about diagnosis, right? We want to, changing parts is not diagnosis. Changing parts is changing parts. Diagnosis is, go gather your information. It's you know, the first thing I do on every repair now, it just seems like it's getting more and more. And, you know, sometimes I don't do it because, oh, I don't need to, you know, I'll come up with a reason why I don't need to scan it. And I get my butt kicked the first 10 minutes. All right. It's, you know, ego gets in the way of, I already have the answer. And, you know, scanning just tells me an awful lot. Not finding something tells me an awful lot. Yesterday, I don't know if you heard the opening comments, but I was working on that Mercury Montego yesterday real quick, and I'm looking for a fuel trim issue. And I can tell you everything that's not causing the fuel trim issue. And that's a diagnosis. That's, I know what's good. So now I'm zeroing in on what's bad. You're going the other way. And listen, I get it. A lot of us, you know, we have that approach because we're limited by tools. And, you know, it's tough because people still want to fix their own vehicles. And I commend you guys for it. But, you know, my job is to keep you on the straight and narrow. So the first thing I want you to do after you get off the phone is talk to your buddy. Did he scan? Did he do an OBD2 scan, which would only be emissions, engine control, trans control modules, that thing? Or was it a complete year, make, model right across the board? And that's what you're looking to do. All right? And then if he did that, if his scan tool has that ability, then the next thing I'd like to do is if we go in with that scan tool, does it have bi-directional control? And here's the other reason you plug in. Blower motor doesn't work. Can the scan tool make it work? Can the scan tool take over the job of the controls and make that blower function? If not, that tells us something. Can it, you know, run the LEDs on the dash display? If not, that tells us something. So go scan this. I bet you you're going to find, if this is what I think it is, I bet you you're going to find a communication fault. And then you can call me back or we'll talk about connector 248 in the left lower kick area. And either that or you'll get down there and it'll be obvious that this has some corrosion inside that connector. Did you buy this truck recently, Mike? Within the last couple of months?
No, it's been probably 6 months, I guess.
Okay. I'm just thinking about the weather in Texas. They had a lot of floods and stuff. And you know, I'm just thinking about flood vehicles and crazy electrical stuff. So, but see what that does for you. Go ahead, do that. You call me back. I'm here for you, brother. All right.
Okay. Thanks. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You be well. Let's diagnose that. That's kind of crazy. Hey, by the way, did you hear up in Maine, real fast? Maine's rolled out the state's first electric school bus. It was only $350,000. 80% of it was paid for by a grant from Volkswagen. There's got to be something wrong with this picture, right? Volkswagen, the king of emissions fraud. It came out of the Volkswagen emissions fraud settlement. How come we don't talk about that anymore? That just kind of got right under the table. But the guys who had emissions fraud, or pioneered the term, I think, are paying for the first electric school bus up in Maine, only $350,000. Good Lord, where's the world going? I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
Start talking.
Glad to. Right away, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, at your service. Let's get over to Derek in Kansas. Derek, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 1991 Chevrolet C1500.
Okay.
It has no lockup and is falling out of overdrive after I did a cam swap on it.
Okay.
I just want to know, am I going to put in a less aggressive camshaft, or what do you think?
No, I'm not. I've never seen a mechanical cam change cause a vehicle not to get lockup and start setting fault codes. You've got fault codes in this, you were saying?
Yes, 39 and 68.
Okay. Do you have a scan tool?
No, I do not.
Okay. So 39 and 68, let's talk about 68. 68 is, it's not seeing input-output speed sensor signal.
Okay.
39 is an issue with the torque converter clutch. So the reason you don't have overdrive is because the torque converter clutch can't apply because it's seeing a fault in the circuit and it might be electrical. Now, I'm trying to remember 91. Wasn't there a couple of ground eyelets on the back of the intake manifold on studs, or am I thinking of a different vehicle? You sure you got you sure you got all your wiring back together correctly?
I know there's at least one grounding stud. I think it just goes straight from the engine block to the firewall.
Okay. But there's,
that's all I know.
There's nothing missing, right? And it all worked before you took it apart, right?
Correct.
Okay. It's not the cam. You've got something disconnected, pinched, jammed in the wrong spot. The only other thing, there's a connector. The main engine connector, C100, comes out of the left side of the cowl. And, okay. I mean, the wiring harness looks good over there. You didn't damage anything, pull, poke, prod, you know, misshape, nothing like that?
No, I did not.
Okay. I don't see this as a fault of the mechanical cam, Derek. I really don't. You know,
okay.
How crazy of a cam did you put in it, just out of curiosity?
It's a Lunati. I don't have the part number, but it's on a 110 lobe separation. I don't remember the duration, but it's probably around 275, 280 advertised.
And right. Then, where's its horsepower range? Mid-range, $3,000 to $5,000?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, so it's a mid RPM performance cam to give you probably more torque, more pulling power. You're probably towing a trailer, as a guess.
No, it's just a hot rod.
Okay, I don't see it though as a fault. If you told me, hey, I don't have the power, hey, I can't get out of passing gear, if I can't, you know, that's a different conversation. But a mechanical cam swap. You've got something disconnected. You're missing a ground. You're missing a connector. You know, there's a reason for that. Get a scan tool. And listen, if you're going to work on an older vehicle, get a scan tool. All right? There's cheap stuff on eBay, right? There's a lot of shops that don't work on older vehicles anymore. That's a pre-OBD2, so that's OBD1. There's,
yes.
You know, go buy a either an OTC Monitor 4000, or a snap-on brick, as we called it, with the cartridges, all right? And they're you'll find either one on eBay. I think I saw a snap-on brick on eBay a couple of weeks ago. It was like $500. And, you know, as long as it's in decent shape, that it doesn't look like it's been drop-kicked or used as a doorstop for the past 10 years, I can't think of a better thing to add to the arsenal, because now at least you can go in and you're looking at data, you're looking at codes, you have the ability to clear codes properly. You know, because my first question would be, if you clear codes, do those codes come right back?
Yeah, they do. If I disconnect the battery.
You're disconnecting the battery. Yeah, I kind of thought that's what you were doing. So,
yeah.
You know, so you've got a hard circuit fault. So then the next thing would be, you know, to go through connector, either connector 100, or you didn't do anything with the connector at the side of the trans case, right? You didn't work on any of that or do anything with that?
I did pull the transmission one time to do a converter, and then I noticed I had a problem, so I put the stock converter back in.
Okay.
But it was pre-existing before, I guess.
Right. The fault was pre-existing before you did. So which did you do first, the cam or the converter?
The cam.
Okay, so you did the cam, you didn't have a convert, you don't have lockup anymore. Okay, and you put a different converter in it, that didn't get you anywhere, and now you're back to a stock converter, or the original converter, and the replacement cam.
Yes.
Okay. Get a scan tool. I want you to go look at input and output speed sensors. In other words, there's going to be two separate PIDs or two separate pieces of data. You can look at input speed on the input shaft. You can look at output speed. All right. Does the speedometer work okay?
Yes.
Okay. And it could be an input speed fault. Let's do that. Call me back if you need more information. If you need more info, because you're probably going to have a hard time finding it, Derek, send me an email, okay. ron@cardoctorshow.com with the VIN, 17-digit VIN. I'll be glad to look up code charts for 39 and 68 and send them to you. And this way, at least you have wiring diagrams to follow.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, kiddo. You be well.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's get on over and talk to... Let's go talk to Michael in Connecticut, see what's going on here, 13 Focus. Michael, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, it's Michael.
Hey, Michael. How are you? What's going on?
Good. Hey, Ron. Thanks for doing the show. Thanks for your integrity and sharing your experience.
Well, you're welcome. Appreciate sir. That. You're welcome. How can I help you? What's going on?
So, 2013 Ford Focus, 2.0 GDI.
Right.
With the ever-famous dual-clutch 6-speed transmission.
Oh, yeah.
149,000 miles.
Wow. Original trans?
Yeah.
You should...
Original trans. Ford changed the clutch at 60,000.
Right.
And updated the transmission control module to the latest version.
Yeah.
I'm getting this engine surge. It's intermittent, and it'll go to shift from second to third gear, and the engine just drops to idle, and then it races up to 5,500 RPM, goes back and forth a few times, finally figures out where it wants to be, goes into second gear, and then goes up into third gear.
Okay. Any fault codes?
No fault codes.
Okay. So my next step, and I've dealt with this trans is a pain in the neck. There's no other way to say it. I'd say something else if we weren't on air.
We bought the car new, so.
Yeah. I'd like to see this car go through with a scan tool. You need a scan tool to do it, but I'd like to look at the internal clutch values on that vehicle to see if they're in spec, and I'd like to do an adaptive reset where you're going to retrain it for its shift ability. You know, it's kind of like in the old days we did fuel trim resets. We're going to do a trans trim reset, so to speak.
That's been done.
Okay. Does it change the characteristic of the way the trans operates?
Yes, it did, and it shifted fine. So, you know, I worked on it for a while. I did quite a few things to it. We can go through that if you want.
Sure.
I actually got so undrivable, I dropped it off at Ford. 10 days later, they called me up and said, we can't get it to act up at all. It's been fine for us, but we did the adaptive learning on the transmission. And they had done that previously, like a year and a half ago. I took it in for some shifting problems and a couple service bulletin recalls. And they did the learning, and it worked good for about 45,000 miles. And then I went to work. I just did some suspension work, and my daughter took her car, and she said, it's acting up. I pulled it in, and I found a miss on cylinder 4. One of the coils was starting to burn through. So I pulled the plugs, did a compression test. Compression was 178 to 182 on all cylinders. Put new plugs in it, replaced the coil. Car runs perfect. Took it around the block, 1 mile around the block. I said, there you go. She calls me up 2 days later. Same thing. And I took it for a ride. This time I felt what she was talking about. When you start going up a hill, or if you're on a highway cruise and there's no load, like flat and level, it starts wandering again.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Michael, sit tight. Let me pull over and take a pause. We'll finish when I come back. Don't go away. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor will be back right after this. Welcome back. We're on Andy, the Car Doctor. Michael, you're still there.
I am here.
So let's do it this way, all right? I'll be honest with you. To me, it sounds like you've got a trans issue, but let's prove it, all right? You have a scan tool?
I do.
Okay. Can you take it for a ride? You know, when the problem happens, look at the scan tool. Does it show any misfires?
There are no misfires.
Okay.
I even went into mode 6, and there's nothing.
Good.
I mean, this car runs good.
It runs good.
It runs perfect.
Right, but when it runs bad, are there any misfires? When the engine surge occurs.
No.
Right? When the engine surge occurs, are there any misfires? When the engine surge occurs, does fuel trim stay consistent? In other words, are you seeing a change in the operating characteristics of the engine when the fault happens?
No.
Then I don't think it's engine. I think it's trans. And
I could have swore, you know, I for 3 days, it didn't do it cold. It did it hot. And I took it to Ford, because I said it needs a TCM. And they had it, and they drove it 70 miles and didn't find any codes, no problems. So they just did the transmission recalibration for me.
Right.
And we drove it. She did run it down about an eighth of a tank, and it started acting up again. So then I started chasing fuel. But I'm looking at, I can't read low pressure fuel pressure. I can only read the high pressure on my scan tool.
Well, if fuel pressure was affecting the way the vehicle operated, where do you think you'd see the change without looking at fuel pressure? You'd see fuel.
I'm not sure I understood.
Well, if we've got a fuel starvation issue, if you're thinking fuel starvation, if I understand you right, you will likely.
Yeah, if you go back to go back to my 69 Mach 1 on a hot day, and it acts like it's vapor lock.
Well, okay. So if you're thinking this is a fuel issue, I mean, you can watch fuel pressure, your high side pressure anyway. If you've got a high side pressure that's solid, then low side pressure has to be good. It's high side is what you're going to see GDI wise. I mean, that's not, but my point becomes if you think this is a fuel pressure issue, where's fuel trim? If this is starving for fuel, you're going to see a change in fuel trim. You're going to see it go lean by a drastic proportion.
And it doesn't. Fuel trim, well, long and short term, both stay around -5,
right,
+5, no matter where my foot's at.
I don't think
sometimes the long term will go to -8 when evap opens up.
I really don't think you've got an engine running issue from what you're describing and telling me. I think your problem's in the trans. If the adaptives change the way it operates, whether it's the trans controller, whether it's the trans itself, but this is a trans related issue. And I'm not sure. I would venture to guess that most of this is probably still covered under the extended warranty Ford had because of the disaster of what that trans is. And I don't want to stand up here and just point fingers at the trans and say, oh, it's the trans. I'm trying to come up with logical reasons why we think it's the trans. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's why I called you. Is this one of those situations where I get to go buy a new tool and buy a Ford IDS?
Nah, you don't need an IDS for this. You just need something that'll read data stream. And it sounds like, what are you using right now?
It's an Innova.
Yeah, as long as you can read data stream in mode 6. Michael, you've got enough. I mean, listen, you're welcome to go buy anything you want, but I'm telling you, I think you've got enough tool. I would take it to Ford and say, listen, let's go for a ride. Let's first catch it in the act of acting up. And when you catch it in the act of acting up, then, where does it go from there? Once you can prove to them, hey, here's the problem. Now, how are we going to fix it? They've got to see the problem first. I think that's the first inclination. So you're going to have to do a little hand-holding here. Good luck to you. Call me back if you need more. But like I said, it sounds like the engine is running okay. The fault's in the trans somewhere. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor. Sometimes, well, as my friend Steve Etheridge always says, we don't know what we don't know, right? And that's part of what Michael in Connecticut's going through. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. Prove the engine is working, and then we'll talk about what it could be, right? Because it's going to be trans. And listen, don't be afraid to do research. We do research all the time. I do research. I had an 08 Volvo VC70 or V70 this week. The alternator wasn't charging, no charging system output, and it had this weird whining sound going on. It would come and go on occasion, and it's been a while since I've worked on one of these. It wasn't a real popular model. We didn't see a ton of them, so I needed a little bit of a refresher. I picked up the phone. Well, actually, I plugged in my scan tool. I pulled codes. There were none, and I sent a tech help request to the boys over at Opus IVS, right, because you can do that. You can talk to their tech line and talk to a specialist in that car line area that you're having questions about. And I got to talk to Jed. Super fun. Matter of fact, I punched in the tech request. About 30 seconds later, the phone rang, and I said to him, what held you up? Within under a minute, I got a phone call. Now, I'm not saying it's like that all the time. It's just he said, it looked like a fun call. I wanted to talk to you anyway. And we kind of kicked it around back and forth, and he explained to me how that final drive works and the gear drive works and the way the coupling grabs the alternator. And you want to know all this because the alternator on this particular Volvo, are you ready for this? Is under the intake manifold, because that's where I would put it, right? It's, let's just make it so accessible. So when you take something apart, you only want to do it once. And Jed pointed out, and I had forgotten about this, that the coupling was probably loose. And he was right. I could take the coupler with a thin straight blade screwdriver down under the intake and spin it by hand, meaning the center bolt going up the inside of the coupling had backed out. Monday, we'll take the intake off, tighten up the bolt, and give the customer back his car. and it won't be for anywhere near as the price of what an alternator could be. So thanks to boys over at Opus IVS, opusivs.com. Another great job, another great tip. Thanks a lot. I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.